Last November, former Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham pleaded guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes from military contractors. But the story doesn't end there. Not only has the Cunningham affair cast a shadow over a host of Washington insiders, but it's revealed an ugly side of how decisions are made and money is spent in our halls of power. I'm joined now by Judy Bachrach, who's written an article called Washington Babylon about Cunningham and company in the August issue of Vanity Fair. Ms. Bachrach is a contributing editor at the magazine. I'm very pleased to welcome her to my show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you.
When did Randy Cunningham arrive in Washington?
Oh, he came in 93. And at that time, he had a motto. His slogan was, a congressman you can trust. a congressman you can be proud of. And he, at that time, ran in the primary against a congressman named Bill Lowry, who, with his wife, had bounced 300 checks in the House bank. So at that point, Cunningham was supposed to be the clean guy.
And where does the name Duke come from?
Cunningham was a war hero in the Vietnam War, and he was an ace pilot, and he downed a lot of Russian MiGs, and he was considered a hero. And he took the call name, the pilot call name, Duke, after his hero, John Wayne, and he held on to it for dear life in civilian life.
And I understand he inspired parts of the Top Gun movie.
Well, he'll tell you that.
Oh.
The truth is, we're not too sure about that. He has told many audiences that Tom Cruise, the character Tom Cruise played in Top Gun, was indeed based on him, Randy Cunningham.
As far back as 1997, there were press reports of, should I call him Duke or Cunningham?
Do call him Duke.
Duke's strong support of handing out government contracts to companies owned by a man named Brent Wilkes. First of all, who is Brent Wilkes?
Brent Wilkes was a California-based defense contractor. He is allegedly, I have to say, because he claims he's innocent, one of two men, chief men, who bribed Cunningham, two chief contractors. The other one is Mitch Wade, who was, for a long while, a protege of Brent Wilkes. It gets pretty complicated. And Wilkes supposedly gave more than $600,000 to Representative Cunningham. Wade was more munificent. He paid Cunningham $1 million, and he admits that.
And he's gone. He has pled guilty to bribery.
He has pled guilty. He hasn't yet been sentenced. He's singing, as they say.
He owned a Washington-based firm called MZM.
Correct.
What is MZM?
And that, too, was a defense contracting firm. It also did, more than Wilkes, a lot of intelligence work for the military. Mitch Wade had the good sense to hire a lot of former Pentagon people to work for him and former intelligence people to work for him, and he was able to have a lot of connections.
Was he at least delivering what he was promising?
Sometimes. Mitch Wade actually has been accused of overbilling the government for work not performed. And Wilkes has been accused of also of fraudulent contracts by a Pentagon official.
Now, I mentioned that there have been press reports linking Cunningham to these guys as far back as 1997. Where were they appearing?
Oh, well, don't forget, initially nobody said fraud. Nobody said this is terrible.
But they were noting certain problems.
The San Diego Union-Tribune, which is a superb newspaper, was writing about this from way back. They got a Pulitzer for it just this past year, and they deserved one.
But not many people are paying attention.
That is correct.
And why do you think that is? If it's in a local newspaper, you would have thought that it would have somehow come to affect Randy Cunningham, and maybe other newspapers in California would have picked it up?
Well, one of my best sources told me something very interesting. He said, you have to compare what's going on now. And believe me, Leonard, this isn't just about Randy Duke Cunningham. There are lots of Congress people involved. There are lots of defense contractors involved. And even a top CIA official is now being investigated. And what you have to understand is, he said, we were operating, and he's talking about the United States here, under a one-party system. where one party, and in this instance it's the Republican Party, had control of almost everything. There were no checks and balances. It was all done, or much of it was done, in the shadow of 9/11, where not too many questions were asked about defense contracting. And therefore, you could be as blatant as you wanted to be. Cunningham was the most blatant.
Well, yeah, he had a Rolls Royce, for example. You have to wonder whether a man on a congressional salary, what's happening when he shows up at the parking lot in Washington in a Rolls Royce. But before the Republicans control the Congress, the Democrats control the Congress, and there was a lot of talk about similar things happening. The Republicans promised reform to clean house. Did it end the minute they threw the old bums out and became the new bums?
It ended the minute they threw the old bums out. The Republican Party has become, probably because there is, as I said, no viable alternative right now, or at that point, a very cocky party. They were taking criticisms from nobody. Nobody wanted to investigate. I think you have to not only look at the people who are the culprits in this, but at Congress itself. Congress did not want to investigate. The Ethics Committee dragged its feet. The Intelligence Committee right now of Congress is only now investigating. People have known about Cunningham for years. There was no secret made about Cunningham by the people who bribed him, particularly not by Mitch Wade, who used to boast about it and say, quote, "I own Duke Cunningham."
It's also so blatant. If I wanted to take bribes, if I were in that position, I might ask for some cash discreetly handed over. But we had the use of this Rolls Royce. We had all these high-priced high-priced antiques. They bought his house for $700,000 over market value.
And never lived in it.
There are rumors that he also was provided with prostitutes.
Yes. The federal people are looking into that because they want to see if the prostitutes were another form of bribe. There was a taxi escort service that apparently brought these prostitutes mainly to the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., also to the Western Grand. And Duke Cunningham would see them there. Defense contractors, it is alleged, yes.
My guest is Judy Bachrach, who's written an article called Washington Babylon for the August issue of Vanity Fair, talking about Randy Duke Cunningham. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820, or online at WNYC.org. You've used the phrases weapons contractor and defense contractor. Is there a distinction?
Yes. For instance, there were defense contractors who were connected, who just did things. Well, I'm talking about Wilkes, who mainly were involved with digital computing equipment that could convert maps, say old maps, into computer formats. So in that instance, that's not particularly a weapon, but that's defense. Then there were some weapons contractors as well. There were all sorts of people involved. It was very well known, and we're really not only talking about Cunningham here, that there were a certain number of congressmen who were on the take.
But what did they expect in return for this money?
What did the defense contractor expect?
Well, for example, I know Duke Cunningham sat on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee,
right,
as well as the Intelligence Committee, which oversees the CIA, but he wasn't the chairman of those committees. He's just one of the guys.
Well, don't forget, one of the current chairmen, Representative Jerry Lewis of Appropriations, right now is under investigation by federal prosecutors. A lot of people... For the same sort of thing. A lot of people, I am told, were informed very specifically by people on the Appropriations Committee, by congressmen. We get along. We play ball together. We're a team. So there was a lot of, shall we say, friendship and understanding among these men. And I am pretty sure that this investigation is not going to stop with Cunningham. It's not going to stop with Lewis. There are already other people being looked at and scrutinized. Even people who are not on the Appropriations or Intelligence Committee, already Representative Catherine Harris, who's running for the Senate. people may remember her from 8 years, 6 years ago, when she oversaw, as people may recollect, the election in Florida, the terrible recount between Al Gore and George W. Bush. She, too, is being investigated right now.
Because she had $3,000 dinners at fine Washington restaurants.
That is true.
With Wade.
She did
3,000,
have...
Now, what, 3, is that 3,300? 3,
no, 3,300. More than that, actually.
What could they have been eating?
Well,
$3,300 is a lot of money.
Quite a lot, but also there were great wines, I gather. But the problem really is those lavish dinners weren't the only reason she's being scrutinized.
She must have been talking about something at those dinners.
She was talking about perhaps that Wade, who was the chief briber of Representative Cunningham, would throw her a very big fundraiser. She was also asked by Wade to make sure to pressure the Appropriations Committee into making sure he could have a $10 million for a naval facility, counterintelligence facility, in her district. And she actually went ahead and pushed them to do so, but didn't work out.
Well, how do these committees work? How do members of a committee steer money and contracts in one direction rather than another?
Well, very often, not always, but often it's done through a process known as earmarking. Earmarking means simply that you have your representative Y and you have a pet project, and you make sure that the way the bill is structured, it could only apply to your favorite firm, defense contracting firm.
You mean you put in certain restrictions that nobody else can deal with other than the company that you
Correct.
Are promoting.
If I was doing it for Leonard Lopate, I'd say a guy wearing a red shirt, you know, who has his own radio show. You make sure it defines the person exactly or the firm. And that's the way it's often done, and it's done secretly. See, that's another thing about 9/11. In the shadow of 9/11, a lot of this stuff was done secretly, particularly if it dealt with intelligence. And you could put in your pet project quite secretly. Nobody would be the wiser, including the press.
And Duke Cunningham wound up on these two committees, Defense Appropriations and Intelligence, because of his background, his military
background?
Well,
partly because, yes, he was a
Did he ask
a hero.
For those?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course. Those are very, very prestigious. And in his case, remunerative as well. Why shouldn't he ask for them? He was the most overt of the corrupt. In other words, Duke Cunningham had a bribes menu. I don't know if you heard about this, but on his House of Representatives stationery, he actually wrote down underneath the American Bald Eagle exactly how much he would give a defense contractor, in this case Mitch Wade, and how much money he, Duke, would receive in return. For instance, Mitch Wade was supposed to give him a $140,000 boat to live on. In return, Mitch Wade would get, and Cunningham wrote this down, $16 million defense contract. Then below that, he would get a $17 million defense contract if he gave Cunningham the boat plus $50,000. And it went up and up and up and up like that.
And he felt safe enough, secure enough in his situation
totally.
To not worry about doing it on stationery. That's because right now one party controls both the Congress and the White House. So
it's also because Congress has an aversion to investigating itself. I think we have to blame both
parties.
So how
do these guys wind up being investigated at all? The Justice Department is reluctant to investigate.
No kidding. They got investigated because, A, Randy Duke Cunningham, there's no other way to put this, was really stupid about his greed and very overt and flagrant. And B, thanks to a free press, thanks to the San Diego Union-Tribune.
So they had no choice. They just had, when the story was laid out for them in the newspapers, they just had to go after it. Now, this is a guy who also was kind of self-righteous about things. You write that he, I'm quoting, excoriated Democrats who wanted to cut the defense budget, calling them the same people who would put homos in the military.
Right. That's what he said.
Where did he say that?
Well, you see, Duke Cunningham went off the deep end all the time, and that's partly accounted for part of his popularity. He got into physical scuffles with another congressman, James Moran, a Democrat. He said that anybody who questioned his Duke's ethics could, quote, go to hell. So he was constantly saying he was noble and everybody else was disgusting.
Now, when the FBI raided Louisiana Democrat William Jefferson's office because he is alleged to have accepted bribes to promote the interests of some African businesses, the Bureau came under fire from congressional leaders on both sides of the aisle. The Republicans were upset because they saw this as reaching back to people like Cunningham?
Well, it certainly didn't make them feel comfortable. There was a constitutional issue there. It was felt by both sides. And actually, that's a more complicated issue than the one I'm dealing with here. The question was, could the FBI go into a federal office of Congress, another branch of government, and rifle through somebody's belongings? I'm pretty sure the answer is, yeah, they can. But it was a valid constitutional issue. In this instance, there was no constitutional issue at all. It was fear on the part of Congress.
Well, it came about at the same time people were also learning a lot about Jack Abramoff. So there seems to be right now a sense that something is rotten in Washington, D.C.
That is correct. We are a banana republic right now in Washington.
Is Jack Abramoff tied in any way to the Cunningham-Wade scandal?
So far, I haven't seen it. I have not seen it. It was really interesting. Abramoff goes to one bunch of people. These defense contractors went to another bunch of people. A lot of these people, interestingly enough, that I covered were from California and from the same area, San Diego area of California.
That's Jerry Lewis is from that
Jerry
area
Lewis, Cunningham. So
now we're talking about the unfunny Jerry Lewis.
The unfunny Jerry Lewis. Not at all funny. This is a congressman, and he's the head of appropriations. And Lowry, who is now a lobbyist, is from that area. And so was the number three of the CIA, a guy named Kyle Dusty. It's his nickname, Fogo. He also was from that area. And a lot of them knew each other. So did Mr. Wilkes. You know, they all knew each other. They were all buddies.
Have any suspicious links been alleged between Wade or Cunningham and the White House?
There is one instance, and I mention it in my story, which is very peculiar, and no one I've talked to has been able to explain it totally. But here's the curious coincidence. Right before Duke Cunningham received a boat or was allowed to live on a boat worth $140,000 from Mitch Wade, the defense contractor, a month before, Mitch Wade received a contract from the Executive Office of the President for $140,000 to provide software intelligence equipment. It is such an odd number. I mean, if you had said to me, oh, he got $300,000 for the thing and then $100,000, I wouldn't have made the connection. But 1 month hiatus, $140,000 each time. I've asked everybody I could about this, and nobody has a substantive answer. They say it is a coincidence, and it may be more than a coincidence. No one knows.
Judy Bachrach is my guest. She is an editor at Vanity Fair. She's written an article called Washington Babylon, California Republican Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham traded military contracts for $2.4 million in antiques, cash, and other booty. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Judy Bachrach of Vanity Fair. She has written an article for the current issue of the magazine called Washington Babylon about Randy Duke Cunningham and the whole atmosphere of scandal in Washington. One of your sources told you that the enabler in the story is the Pentagon. What does that mean?
That source meant, and that source was in a good position to know, that the Pentagon was basically willing to do anything so that it could get its own projects underway. And if that meant basically paying off Cunningham's good friends, they were willing to do that. They were willing to give lots of money to Mr. Wilkes and Mr. Wade, who are accused of being the two chief bribers of Representative Cunningham, in order to get what the Pentagon wanted. They said to themselves, Cunningham is going to let us build the Taj Mahal of intelligence for the military as long as we throw a few million bucks in the way of his friends. So, and they had good reason to believe that.
So you're suggesting that the Pentagon was also a briber here.
The Pentagon was a willing victim. That's the best way I can put it. And they learned the hard way. For example, in 1999, Brent Wilkes, who is accused or who is thought perhaps by prosecutors to have given more than $600,000 to Representative Cunningham, wrote a talking points memo for Cunningham in capital letters and basically telling Cunningham he was supposed to yell at the military, at the Pentagon officials, and say, you give Mr. Wilkes $10 million in defense contractors, and if you don't obey me, I'm going to get somebody else to call you. And Wilkes wrote this out for the congressman. At this point, both Cunningham and Jerry Lewis, the not funny Jerry Lewis, who is the head of appropriations.
I don't know which one we're talking about. Neither of them are very funny.
Got up and said, we are withdrawing our support for the F-22 Raptor fighter jet. Now, they had both supported it very strongly as an absolute must for the Pentagon. All of a sudden, they're saying we're withdrawing our support. So they were, in effect, basically saying, Mr. Wilkes doesn't get any money. We're withdrawing our support. Much of that money was restored to Mr. Wilkes by the Pentagon. He got $5 million, and much of the money for the Raptor F-22 fighter jet was restored for the Pentagon by Congress. Now, Mr. Lewis claims he knew nothing about this. What a coincidence. Mr. Cunningham does not. Mr. Cunningham concedes that he did do this, and a year later, he got $100,000 from Mr. Wilkes.
You spoke to a psychiatrist who'd worked for Cunningham's defense team and who had told the judge that Cunningham was naive and was just being manipulated by his cronies.
Totally manipulated.
Had he seen the bribe menu?
No, he had not. He also said, very important, that Cunningham was a guy who, quote, likes to look for the best in people. He says, this is Saul Fairstein, the psychiatrist, that he never knew about the bribes menu, that he was annoyed with the lawyers for Cunningham, that they hadn't shown it to him.
Maybe he was naive.
Maybe he was naive. Now, the lawyer for Cunningham says, very interestingly, we gave Dr. Fairstein everything we have, which indicates to me that Cunningham didn't tell his lawyers and didn't tell his shrink that he had a bribes menu, or that he tried to inveigle innocent people into covering up his money-making schemes, which he also did.
So, although he had this tearful televised exit from public life, do you think that he was really just feigning remorse?
Totally. Like 4 or 5 days before he pled guilty and wept in public and said he felt so much shame, he was calling up an antiques dealer from whom he'd gotten a lot of free antiques courtesy of Mr. Wade, and saying, you know that Victorian commode, that very expensive one that Mitch Wade bought for me at your shop? I'd like you to hide it somewhere. Please put it into storage, which, of course, they didn't do because by then the FBI had visited them. In other words, he knew the government was going to confiscate all his ill-gotten goods, including the beautiful antiques, so he was trying to hide them from the government. And 4 days later, he pleads guilty, crying.
How do you find out all about this? Do you just walk into an antique dealer's store and say, hey, I heard that you had some dealings with Duke Cunningham?
Well, part of the way I found this out is I had a very nice source who told me that she was ordered to buy antiques by Mitch Wade. She used to work for Mitch Wade, and he ordered. And I said, tell me the name of the store. And I figured that must be the store from which Mitch Wade bought antiques also for Representative Cunningham. And I was right. So I called her up.
And I suspect that's what the FBI also did.
That is what they also did. But they had Mitch Wade singing to them by then. Mitch Wade was already, you know, going to the government and saying, I did this and Cunningham did that and Mr. Wilkes did the other thing.
Another one of your sources was Tom Casey, wasn't
that's
he?
That's right.
Now, he had something to gain by talking
about
this.
Actually, he has nothing to gain anymore.
Well, he's a defense contractor who worked with and
he's a former
competed
defense.
With
He's a former
Wade
defense contractor. He doesn't have the company he used to have. He really, I have to say this, although he was reviled by all the other attorneys in my story, He really has nothing to gain. He was angry from the get-go. He felt that these people were corrupt, and he was sick of it. He's one of those people who seems to be a good citizen.
My guest is Judy Bachrach. She's written an article called Washington Babylon. It's in the August issue of Vanity Fair magazine with a big picture of the Watergate. And on its front page, I guess the Watergate is where things continue to happen in Washington.
It's a wonderful place.
So let's talk about somebody you mentioned briefly before, Kyle Dusty Fago, one of the greatest names to pop up in Washington scandal in quite a while. Dusty Fago. We have Duke and we have Dusty here.
Right. We also have a guy named Nine Fingers from the CIA. So, like, it's an interesting story in terms of names. Mr. Fogo was...
Oh, it's Fogo. I said Fago. Yeah, I should
you
have.
You know, I call him Fogo. You can call
no,
him
No, I think
Fogo.
It may be...
Potato,
I don't
potato. But he had been a very obscure person within the CIA. He was not famous, and he was not loved, and he had been in Central America, and he wasn't, shall we say, the top echelon of the CIA. And all of a sudden, he's made number three in the CIA, and nobody could understand it.
Now, that's Portegas, who just been appointed to head the CIA, to the surprise of a lot of people, but comes out of Congress. Is there a congressional connection here?
Yes. Portegas was on the Intelligence Committee, as you know, in Congress, and another guy who was there was a guy named Nine Fingers, who his name, real name is Brent Bassett, and he was a good friend of Dusty Fogo, and as well of Portegas, and he said, you know, you really should make Fogo a top echelon guy, number three, because he's done wonderful things for the agency. Actually, Mr. Fogo was quite well known for being, shall we say, a little bit vulgar. He denies this, and I have to say that, but I heard it from Mr. Casey that he used to go into a Washington, D.C. strip club and flash his CIA ID at the bouncer. And then he would be seated in the front row, and then he would talk about deviant forms of sex, shall we say, with all of his friends, and suggest that they perform them on various strippers. So he wasn't the kind of guy who you make number three, really, ideally. And indeed...
And Portegas had no idea?
I don't know what Portegas knew. I do know that that was probably not a brilliant selection. Mr. Fogo is currently being investigated also by prosecutors for having perhaps given a $3 million contract to Brent Wilkes, his old friend from California, and one of the accused bribers of Cunningham. Now, Mr. Fogo says, I didn't know that CIA contract was going to a company owned by Brent Wilkes. I leave it to you to figure out.
Do you think the investigation of Fogo has anything to do with Portegas leaving the CIA earlier
yes.
this year?
I think that Portegas demonstrated, I don't think it was the only reason for Goss's early retirement, shall we call it, but I think he demonstrated very poor judgment all around. Very important people from the CIA left, including a very, very prominent guy named Steve Kappas, who's just being brought back, who is really the head of all intelligence for a long time. And so people were disgusted with Portegas, and I might add they were disgusted with Dusty Fogo, too, in the job he held.
Well, they were upset that Portegas was politicizing the CIA. At least that's what the accusations were.
Those weren't the only issues. There was a feeling that Portegas had no judgment, period. And by the way, Fogo is apparently part of that politicization of the CIA. And he was also apparently reprimanded by one of his superiors who, interestingly enough, she said he was guilty of insubordination. And interestingly enough, she was a woman and she was an Afro-American woman. So that, and then she left.
And now the new director of the CIA has said amateur hour is over.
Right.
So do you believe him?
I believe that he will and I'm using my intelligence sources for this determination since I'm not, you know, in the CIA, but they believe that he will make a really good effort to make sure. And the reintroduction of Kappas, Steve Kappas, is considered a good move.
So what happens to companies like MZM that are caught involved in this kind of corruption? Did they go out of business?
MZM's assets were bought by another company, which renamed the company Athena Innovative Solutions. Totally different name. A lot of the same people, though. Mitch Wade isn't part of it anymore, but other people are, including Jim King. And it's doing what it always did. It's making a lot of money, and it's paying huge salaries. It's always done that. MZM was a very good place to work for, and I'm sure Athena is too. You know, if you were just a young thing coming out of college or just out of law school, you got paid $105,000, and your law school bill was taken care of.
Now, Mitchell Wade, you said, has pleaded guilty to bribery, and he's now singing. Mm-hmm. What about Brent Wilkes? He's never been indicted.
He's not indicted. He's being investigated, certainly, very hard. I gathered there was an expectation he would plead guilty. When he did not, that, I gather, did infuriate prosecutors. He says he's innocent.
Innocent, even though Randy Cunningham has admitted that he took money from him?
Well, you know, if you listen to his lawyer, all these people were scum, and they're lying through their teeth, which makes you wonder what Wilkes was doing with them as friends. And
they were all buddies. They would go down to Honduras together, didn't they?
Well, the word I heard, and I'm not the only one to hear this, but Mr. Casey went on the record with this, is that Brent Wilkes, who used to work for Tom Casey in California, used to say that, you know, he knew a lot of congressmen from, quote, Honduras, and that's where he got his connections, and that these congressmen were involved in sexual activities with young women in Honduras. There's a lot of sex in this story, too. And the sex that is described, I mean, Mr. Wilkes denies all this, one has to say that, but he denies having said it. But it's interesting that the San Diego Union-Tribune had three people without attribution saying the same thing as my guy said with attribution. So that's all I have to say. A lot of people are coming up with the same story.
Duke Cunningham pleaded guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes. You have suggested that the figure might be a lot higher. Now, people go to jail for many years for robbing a liquor store and getting a couple hundred dollars. Duke Cunningham got 8 years, and many people have said that's too much for a man like him. He also has cancer. What do you think?
Well, his attorney claimed it was basically a death sentence. Duke Cunningham is supposed to live, according to his Navy doctors, no more than 7 years. He has prostate cancer, which recurred. And so the question is he going to die in jail? If he tells the government everything it wants to know, they may reduce his sentence even from the sentence you think is so small.
Well, I was just asking whether it was proportional.
I think the guy's dying. And whether he dies in jail or he doesn't die in jail, nobody will know. It would be useless to give him a 20-year sentence, let me put it that way. In his instance. So that's all I have to say about that. I don't think he's totally ashamed of what he did. And I think this is the most notable factor of this whole thing. I don't think anybody in this story is totally ashamed of what they did.
In your opinion, how much of congressional earmarking is stained by corruption?
I think almost all of it has to be. Otherwise, it wouldn't be earmarking.
Well,
otherwise,
could Congress just simply eliminate earmarking?
That would be a very good idea. I haven't noticed them doing it. I don't see why earmarking has to exist at all. I think that the best man should win, and earmarking is a way of ensuring that that does not happen. So, by the way, the $2.4 million, yes, it is the minimum that Duke Cunningham got in the way of bribes. And when I asked Duke Cunningham's lawyer, is it possible your client took far more than $2.4 million, he answered, no comment, which I found revelatory.
Now, who do you think is next, Jerry Lewis and then who else?
Well, Jerry Lewis is being seriously investigated. So is Bill Lowry, who used to be a congressman and is now and is the best friend of Jerry Lewis and is now a lobbyist whose firm earned more than $7 million last year alone and who managed over the last 6 years to make sure that Mr. Lewis got more than $450,000 from his firm and his clients.
Judy Bachrach's article, Washington Babylon, about Randy Duke Cunningham and any number of other people who've been accused of living in a world of bribery, booze, and broads in Washington is in the August issue of Vanity Fair. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
On tomorrow's show, an underreported report on child marriage, and then a look at one of the Metropolitan Museum's prized treasures, Raphael's Colonna altarpiece. Plus, Charlie Stella explains how his personal involvement with the world of wise guys inspired him to become a crime writer, and we will talk to the widow and daughter of a mafia contract killer. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Melissa Egan with Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blake Neeschick. We had help today from Abe Riesman, Benjamin Yakis, Sophie Rand, and Brian Levinson. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. I'll see you tomorrow.